Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Laura.
And I'm Amity. Let's get started. Hey, here we go into chapters 17 through 21 of Jane Eyre. I was just talking to my friend about this, about how we're recording and how like we divided it up by pages. And so each of our sections is 110 pages. And each of our sections has less and less chapters because the chapters keep getting longer and longer. They're so good. I love them. But holy moly, they're really long.
So the funny thing is one thing I think is whenever we divide them up like this, like there's no rhyme or reason. It's just like, okay, yeah. I take the number of pages divided by how many weeks we want to do. And then I just kind of fit the chapters in. It's like this episode is like the perfect breaking point.
Yeah.
And the last episode was like the perfect breaking point to go into the next.
Yeah, that has happened a lot in the books that we've done. It's just sort of happenstance, but.
And chapter 17, I thought was never going to end. I think it was the longest one, maybe, or at least it felt that way to me.
Jane really realizes that she really likes Mr. Rochester, but then she hears about this Miss Ingram and hears her described, how she's just like this exotic beauty. And so she like makes a drawing of what she thinks Miss Ingram looks like and then takes a likeness of herself. And she's like, whenever you doubt or you think that maybe Mr. Rochester would care about you, you take these two out and compare them and be like, reality check. There's no way he's going to like you when he could like her, which is like this like, takes my heart and rips it out. That's so sad.
I've had those feelings before in my life, but like never to that, done anything to that extent. Like trying to talk yourself, you know what I mean? You might think,
yeah,
like, well, of course he's going to like her or whatever, but never to that degree.
Yeah, I don't know that very many people would. We can certainly all relate to the sentiment of just being like, there's no way. Look at her. Look at me. And it's our way of like trying to make ourselves get over the person usually.
Yes.
Because we're like, there's no point. And, oh, but it hurts. It hurts so bad.
And like in this situation, I mean, there's the caste system. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
She's like
also working against her.
Yes. She's like, I know my place.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman is amazing. She even knows that he doesn't love this woman. She can tell, but she just knows because of where her position is. And I had forgotten about, you know, I said I've read 75% of this book three times. I had forgotten about, like, I just thought she moved in and he came home and he liked her. I forgot about this. I mean,
Yes, he totally does. But we forget about all the drama and the doubt and there has to be this other woman to make it a little more relatable and heart-wrenching and all of that. So
I forgot about Blanche, which is a great name. And she's a horrible person. So I'll dive in with chapter 17. Mr. Rochester has been gone for a week, and Mrs. Fairfax tells Jane that he could be gone for more than a year. Like, if he decides to not come home before he goes on, do you remember he's going on some like England something? I don't know, some kind of a trip or adventure. And so Mrs. Fairfax thinks he may not come home before that. And so he could be gone for a really long time, you know, and constantly at this point, Jane is trying to talk herself out of liking him.
Oh my gosh. I just feel it so hard.
I know. She tells herself, you have nothing to do with the master of Thornfield further than to receive the salary he gives you for teaching his protege and to be grateful for such respectable and kind treatment as if you do your duty, you have a right to expect at his hands. So yeah. She's just like, you're just here to teach Adele. He gives you money. That's where it ends. So another week goes by and Mrs. Fairfax then hears that Mr. Rochester is going to come in 3 days and he's going to bring a bunch of guests with him. And the whole house goes into this like frenzy of getting ready for him to come. And even Jane is helping make beds, clean rooms, cook food. And Adele's kind of going wild. Nobody has time to teach her.
Yeah. Which is also relatable because that's having homeschooled my children for a long time. There's certainly been times where like things are so crazy that I'm like, I'm sorry, schooling has to go on hold while I focus on all these other things. And it's just like, then the guilt train arrives and also the crazy train because the kids just are like all over the place. Yay, we don't have to be in school. We don't have to do anything. Like, no, yeah. Actually, you do.
Presley is usually like in our bed eating ice cream. Her hair's ratty. That's what happens when I'm like, got to get an assignment done or work out in the office or something. She just kind of, usually on Saturdays, she gets ignored. So he's bringing a bunch of guests with him. Grace Poole, I really think this is funny. She comes out for about an hour a day and Jane kind of, I mean, doesn't Grace Poole kind of seem normal to her?
Yeah.
He's just like, why is this lady making all these noises at night? And like, she seems normal.
Yeah, so she's anyways. Such a mystery to Jane for sure.
And she comes down a little bit each day, but Jane overhears this conversation where the servants are talking and they're discussing how much Grace gets paid. And it's a lot. Jane is like, I'm pretty sure I don't know what the whole truth is here. Like, there's something going on. And she kind of catches them saying, oh, she doesn't know. They're even talking about Jane not knowing what the situation is.
So she's like, there is something going on. Everybody, even down to like the lowest paid maid, knows what's going on.
Okay. I have that question. Why? Okay. Why does everybody know, but not her? It would make more sense if only Mrs. Fairfax or only Grace Poole knew, but like everybody knows but her. I mean, do you think it's because he likes her? So he's trying to hide this issue he has?
A really good question. I mean, I've got a couple of thoughts. You know that servants talk. I mean, that's just how it was. But a governess would often be very separate from other servants of the house. And so all these people who are in service to the house, they're going to know. They kind of have to because they take care of the household and they're going to talk to each other. They're not necessarily going to talk to her. And so maybe for him, it was like, this is a need to know and she does not need to know. From my understanding, the way that often households were set up, a governess was kind of an outcast in a lot of ways because they were probably paid more, they were more educated and all that, but they were not really good enough to be with the rest of the family for get-togethers and dinners and things like that. But they were also not quite low enough, if you will, to be with the servants. So she definitely would have been separate in that way. So
yeah, she's like an outsider.
Yeah.
Okay.
Completely. So I could see how they would keep it amongst themselves, but they would all know at one point or another because they all talk, but not necessarily include her in that.
Okay. I mean, just thoughts I've had.
Yeah, like, totally.
Like at that point too, why does everybody know and she doesn't? Okay. So Mr. Rochester finally arrives with all of these important guests that he brought with him. And Jane, that first night, is forced to join them, but she spends the evening like on this window seat, kind of away from everybody else, and she doesn't really interact with anybody. I love the section where she's on the side of the room and she's trying not to watch Mr. Rochester, but she can't help herself. This brings back, memories.
Tell us about it.
So just like, of, you know, like, well, I mean, I had a crush on my husband, like from the time I was a young child. I mean, and then when I was, it kind of was when I was young, I really liked him. And then when I was like 14, it really like came back because I was liked boys then. Mm-hmm. And so it was like that with him, like at church and at church dances and stuff. It was really hard not to like watch them all the time. I mean, it's creepy.
Yeah. It's not creepy. It's like human nature. It's biology.
It's just
yeah, like if you like, couldn't control it at all and you're just like following him around and stuff.
That well, I wasn't crazy. Like that. I was a little more discreet. But anyways, I just love it. She says, I wish to think only of the work I have in my hands, to see only the silver beads and silk threads that lie in my lap. So she's like working on something.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm trying really hard just to pay attention to what's in my hands. But she can't.
And it's probably just about impossible. She's very.
Yeah. So as she's watching him, she's thinking about how he looks to her. And she says, most true is that beauty is in the eye of the gazer. And that his features are not beautiful, according to rule. But they were more than beautiful to me. And then I like this sentence too. He made me love him without looking at me. That's cute.
I know. Wow.
I mean, they say so many times that he is not attractive. I just think it's kind of funny that she's like, everybody else might look at him and think, I don't know, but I liked it.
Well, and two, there is something that is very, I don't know. I feel like in a lot of ways, men have it easier because a man doesn't have to just be like strikingly handsome to still be attractive. If he's like very intelligent, has a very masculine and commanding presence, and he treats people well, and he's very gentlemanly, and, you know, like has all those qualities and a good personality and good conversationalist, that makes up for a lot, I think.
Well, I think women are way less visually stimulated.
Yes.
Right.
And yeah. So, and so that's why the qualities really do sort of change the way that he appears in our eyes.
You know what else? What makes me really angry is that men almost get better looking as they get older, and we do not.
It's kind of true.
Like, I'll see couples, older couples, and I'm like, if you're an older couple, I'm sorry, but I'm like, gosh, women, we just age rough and men don't. Or maybe it's because they can grow a beard and hide stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But like, anyways, I just think that's kind of interesting. Okay. So Blanche Ingram, we talked about earlier, and her mother are two of the guests, and they are not very nice to Jane at all.
Yeah. They're just, ooh. Yes. Very stuck up.
And so one night, Jane tries to leave the party and Mr. Rochester stops her. And he does eventually let her go when he notices that she has some tears in her eyes. And he's, I don't know if he's like overwhelming her, freaking her out or whatever. But well, and maybe something had happened at the party to upset her. I don't know, because it probably wasn't him. He insists from then on that every night she come to the drawing room when he has guests. As long as he has guests at Thornfield, she's supposed to come to dinner in the drawing room. And then as he's leaving her, he says, good night, my, and he stops and bites his lip.
Oh, snap.
So what was he going to say? Good night, my love. Good night, my, I don't know.
It seems like he's sort of collecting pet names for her. And so it could have been one of those, but maybe something a little more intimate. To my point before, though, like, it is very interesting and telling that he insists that she comes and joins them. You know, that's not something that would happen too often. It kind of, it really elevates him in my eyes because he does not want her to feel like she's less than. He doesn't make her interact with everybody because I think that he sees that they are just kind of these shallow, ridiculous people that would not be very fun to interact with if you're not from that world. But he wants Jane there. And I think that's really sweet.
Interesting. Oh, this section is good.
It is. I know. Chapter 18 is kind of fun. The guests are still there. And it just starts off by saying, merry days were these at Thornfield Hall and busy days too. Before this all happened, Jane was kind of going, okay, I like it here, but I'm feeling so stagnant. Like nothing ever happens. This was before she met Mr. Rochester. And then she meets Mr. Rochester and she's just like in love. But then he left and she's kind of feeling sad again. And then, but then all these people come and just with everything going on, it's just like constant busyness and so much happening. And so I think that she probably liked that. It says all sad feelings seem now driven from the house, all gloomy associations forgotten. There was life everywhere, movement all day long. And that can, okay. So I hear that and I get a little exhausted, honestly, the introvert in me. It's also kind of fun though, having that going on. We've talked before about how in this period of time, when people went to visit somebody to go stay at their house, it wasn't for a few days. It was like weeks, months, frequently. That's the part that I would be like, okay, it's time for you to go now. Let me have my house back. Maybe because the houses were so large and it didn't bother people so much, but I wouldn't want to be visiting somebody for months and I wouldn't want to have people visiting me for months.
It's just what they did. They would just like hang out.
Do nothing. Yeah.
So Katie went camping this weekend with her boyfriend and her boyfriend's friends. And she did not want to go because she does not like camping. And they went to Winchester Bay, which is like, it's like by Reedsport on the beach, on the coast. Well, her boyfriend and his friends, they go dirt biking. That's why they go camping. And she comes home and she's like, it was horrible. She said, I just sat there. And she said, my phone wouldn't even work. She didn't have any internet.
So she comes home and she's like,
my phone wouldn't even work.
And she needed to take a book.
If she read, right?
So that might force her to.
I was like, well, weren't there other girls there? Like, the other boys have girlfriends. And she's like, yeah, but how much can you just sit around and like talk?
Are you serious?
Yeah. But it's like that. That's how I feel about this. It's like, they just, they would come visit and they would just like have these like awful parties at night where they just like hang out.
Yeah.
On end. It would kill me.
But it forced them to be creative. And these are the times that they would like do poetry recitations and play piano and sing and read stories and play games. And they would do these role plays and stuff. And it was just kind of funny for sure. But Jane is here and she's observing all these things and she's feeling pretty certain that Mr. Rochester has a thing for Miss Ingram. Miss Ingram for sure has something for him. And I think there's a little bit of a suspicion that it's mostly because of his money. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, it's probably for his money, but why would he complain? She's very beautiful. And the Ingrams, they do have title where Mr. Rochester does not, but he has money and they don't. I mean, they've got a little bit, but not much.
So they're using each other.
Oh, 100%. Well, I don't know. I don't think that the title matters to him. It's more like on their side, you know, a lot of times title wants to marry title. You don't want to marry beneath you. But where he's got a bunch of money, they're willing to overlook the fact that he does not have a title. So here's something that Jane says. She says, I have told you, reader, that I had learned to love Mr. Rochester. I could not unlove him now merely because I found that he had ceased to notice me, because I might pass hours in his presence and he would never once turn his eyes in my direction, because I saw all his attentions appropriated by a great lady who scorned to touch me with the hem of her robes as she passed. Oh, just like slice your heart into shreds. Because not only is the man that you love going to marry somebody else, it's this despicable woman that you know is not worthy of him and she despises you. And that just, ooh, no, that would be really hard. Yeah, I mean, a lot happens in this chapter too, but what I want to mostly focus on is there's one evening everybody's together, but Mr. Rochester's not there. And so first of all, this person shows up and he has kind of an interesting accent that nobody really recognizes. His name is Mr. Mason, and he says that he knows Mr. Rochester and he's just going to wait and see him. So he's invited in and he just hangs out. And then apparently one of the servants comes in and says that there is a gypsy woman in the kitchen. And he's like, you know how they come around sometimes. He's like, she's not going to go away unless she's able to read everybody's palms. And everybody's like, what does she look like? Oh, she's so ugly. Just horrid old hag. They're like, okay, like bring her in. This will be fun. And then he says, well, she refuses to come in. She wants to have her own space and you guys each go in individually, right? And so one by one they do, starting with the ladies. And so Blanche goes in, visits with this gypsy, gets her palm read apparently, and comes out and she's very huffy, very, very grumpy afterwards. And Jane's like, huh, I wonder what happened. Well, Jane was not expecting at all to go in and see the gypsy, but it's requested that she does. And so she heads over to the room where the gypsy is. And Sam, the servant who had told everybody about it, is there and is like, do you want me to go in with you? And she's like, no, I'm going to be fine. And so that's actually where the chapter ends. So a couple of things to remember is that there is this man there, this here now, this visitor, his name, I don't think it names him quite yet, but his name is Mr. Mason. He's a foreign gentleman, claims to know Mr. Rochester and knows that he's going to be welcome. So he just comes and settles right in. And Jane is going to go visit this gypsy who did not have nice things to say to Blanche Ingram, apparently. So
do we find out in that chapter that Mr. Mason is from the West Indies?
I don't think it specifically says.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe later. But and so like she knows that Mr. Rochester has traveled there. So chapter 19, I mean, I know you know this so well, but like, I'm like reading, I'm like, oh, So she goes into the library to have her fortune read by the gypsy. And at first, she's very skeptical. And I love, like, the kind of stuff she says. Like, you might say all that to almost anyone you knew lived as a solitary dependent in a great house. You know, it's kind of like what a fortune teller nowadays would tell you. Like,
yeah, like very general statements.
That you could be like, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. You know, it apply to 90% of the people in the population. Right. I took a personality test for my psychology class, and it was like, it told you all these things, and they were all, and then we all got together, and they were like, it was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. We all got together as a group afterwards, and we all had the exact same. They were all the same.
That's so funny.
Basically a joke. Mm-hmm. Not a joke, but like teaching you that, like, you're reading it and you're like, yeah, that's me. That's me. Well, of course, because it says things like, I don't know.
You're a go-getter.
Except when you're not.
Yeah.
That's the good thing.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's what she's saying is, you might say that to anyone who you knew lived in this huge house and, you know, alone, basically.
Yeah.
And the gypsy says that she is very near happiness, within reach of it. And then she says, the materials are all prepared. There only wants a movement to combine them. Jane's like, I don't understand enigmas. I never could guess a riddle in my life. Then the woman asks Jane if she has any dreams. And this was interesting. She said, just a dream of like having my own house with my own school. And what's interesting is that is all that Charlotte Bronte wanted, was for her and her sisters to like open up their own school. He's like, is there anybody in this company that you might be interested in? She says that. The gypsy then tells Jane that the reason Blanche was so upset is because the gypsy had told Blanche that Mr. Rochester didn't have as much money as it looked like he had. So she must be after his money.
Oh, yeah. And also, I think the fact that she got called out like that.
Yes.
Like, yeah, everybody knows what you're about.
Yes. So as the woman then keeps reading Jane's fortune, her voice gets deeper and deeper. And Jane realizes that the gypsy is actually Mr. Rochester. Of course, she's very upset with him for tricking her. Later, she's like thinking back on it. She's like, I thought maybe Grace Poole was the gypsy. Mm-hmm. She's weird and mysterious, and it could have been her. But that's when Jane tells Mr. Rochester about Mr. Mason. She calls him a stranger, like had come. And when she tells him that Mr. Mason is there, he seems kind of concerned or worried. Yeah. That chapter cracked me up. I feel like at this point in the book, I was really enjoying the reading experience. It seemed like less work, more revelations. I don't know.
Yeah, just getting enveloped into the story so that you can get a lot more out of it, for sure.
I enjoyed it.
Agreed. That very night, she's in her room. I believe she just wakes up in the middle of the night, which she does a few times, doesn't she? But she hears like screaming, basically. It says, what a cry. There's a savage, sharp, shrilly sound that ran from end to end of Thornfield Hall. And it just, I mean, can you imagine? There's times that I wake up from a dead sleep because it's super windy here and we have this storage shed in our backyard that the wind like whips it open and then slams it closed, and that kind of it's like right outside my window, and so that kind of thing like just brings me out of a dead sleep. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happening? You know? But I can't even imagine waking up because of screaming
or like that. cackling.
Terrifying. But this wakes her up in the middle of the night. She's going, what in the world is going on? It had awakened everybody. All the gentlemen, all the ladies, they'd all come out of their rooms going, what in the world is going on? Well, Mr. Rochester, he kind of takes charge and he's just like, hey, everybody go back to bed, right? But he says, Jane, come with me. I'm really paraphrasing here. But basically, that's what happens. And so everybody goes back to bed except for Jane. She goes with him. And he's like, does blood bother you? She's like, no, not really. He says, you don't turn sick at the sight of blood. She says, I think I shall not. I have never been tried yet. And he says, just give me your hand. It will not do to risk a fainting fit. Okay, so they go into this room and there is this person. It's Mr. Mason. actually.
I'm so curious as to why he chooses her to go help.
Because he knows. He knows that she's steady and she's smart and she can be trusted. And I think that's the biggest thing. Well, he's not going to ask any of the company, of course.
Right.
And Miss Fairfax, I don't know. He just has a thing. He totally has a thing for Jane. We know that. But he trusts her.
You're trying to hide this from her. I mean, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. So it's just, I thought that was interesting that.
Yeah. It's one of these things he doesn't want her to know. And yet he totally trusts her. He doesn't want her to know the big secret, but he trusts her with all the little things.
Yeah, he probably thinks he can hide. He can still hide it.
So he tells Jane to sit with Mr. Mason because he is bleeding profusely. He has a horrible wound. One of his arms is just completely soaked in blood. It looks like teeth marks or scratch marks or something. It's horrifying. And so Jane's job is to keep him calm and keep him clean. And she has to stay there for quite a while because Mr. Rochester is going to get the actual doctor. And he orders Mr. Mason before he leaves. He's like, don't say anything. Do not talk. Don't talk to Jane. And that's the reason why. First of all, he doesn't want any harm to come to Jane. But also, he doesn't want him to accidentally mention the big secret.
Don't you think you'd be creeped out? Come help this guy. He's bleeding profusely, but you can't talk to him.
You can't talk to him. He can't talk to you. And you can't really know what happened.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense. So she is kind of sitting there in silence, but it says her own thoughts worried her. What crime is this, she thinks, that lived incarnate in this sequestered mansion and could neither be expelled nor subdued by the owner? What mystery that broke out, now in fire and now in blood at the deadest hours of night? You know, whatever is going on, it has caused Mr. Rochester to almost die by fire. And now it has caused Mr. Mason to almost die by scratching him to death or something by blood. Terrifying. It's like, this thing cannot be controlled. What's next? And she really is going, how did Mr. Mason even get involved in all this? And so Mr. Carter, the doctor, does show up eventually. And he's like, oh, Jane, you've done a good job. I don't think I could have done any better. But then they sort of start talking about some things and she overhears them. Mr. Mason is like, this wound was not done with a knife. There have been teeth here. And so it's evident that he's been bitten. And Mr. Mason says, she bit me. She worried me like a tigress. Like, she didn't just bite him. She like gnawed on him. Ew. Okay. First of all, ew. Second of all, horrifying. And can you imagine how bad that would hurt? Holy moly.
I mean, like, you would think, I don't know. Like, I just think about getting attacked by like a tiger, a human. That's disturbing.
Extremely disturbing. Heck, I was just thinking about when, you know, toddlers often go through a little biting phase. And if they bite you, holy crap, it hurts.
And you're scared of them.
You're going to be scared of those little teeth. This is somebody who doesn't just kind of bite. They like really bite ferociously with much stronger jaws. And he's like, yeah, I wasn't expecting it. She looked so quiet at first. Mr. Rochester is like, I warned you. I said, be on your guard when you go near her. Besides, you might have waited till tomorrow and had me with you. It was mere folly to attempt the interview tonight and alone. Okay. So what we know is that Mr. Mason approached this creature, whatever is happening there, by himself. He thought everything was going to be fine. Instead, he got bitten as if almost the same as being attacked by a tiger. So they just go through all this stuff. The thing is, by the end of the night, well, so early in the morning, Mr. Rochester sends Mr. Mason on his way. He's like, okay, so you've seen what you came to see, and now you need to leave. Bye. I mean, he did make sure that, you know, he was all, his wound was clean and all, he was all bandaged and everything. But so then he and Jane kind of go like for a walk in the garden. He gives her a flower. They talk about all these things. They're having quite the conversation and he's sort of like spilling his heart, a little bit of his history. Something that he says is the wandering and sinful, but now rest seeking and repentant man justified in daring the world's opinion in order to attach to him forever this gentle, gracious, genial stranger, thereby securing his own peace of mind and regeneration of life. So he tells her that he'd done some things in his early life that he's regretted so much and he fears they're going to haunt him forever. But he's like, but now there's almost like this new hope in my life. Do I dare defy convention and allow this to be attached to me and be attached and allow myself to be attached to him? And when you're reading it, you're going, he's totally talking about Jane. I don't know. Did you, okay. Yeah.
I mean, like, but he's also, doesn't he talk about like getting married too?
Yeah.
The book I'm going to talk about that I read today, it reminds me of this. Like, he's like, I've got to get married, but then I've got this like side lady here.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. But she doesn't understand all that because she just, there's so much context that she doesn't have. And I don't know if she understands that he's talking about her. I think that a part of her hopes that and sees that, but she's like, well, I don't know if you should do that or not, because I think a part of her too is going, well, okay, is he talking about me or is he talking about Miss Ingram? He shouldn't marry Miss Ingram. And so she's like, you know, she's very clever. She's very smart. But he goes with that. He's like, yeah, Miss Ingram, she's great, isn't she? And yeah, kind of end this conversation going, okay, well, she missed all the cues, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, she's convinced herself so much that there's like no way he would like her.
Yeah.
That she's like,
when he's like basically
telling her,
proposing to her, she's like, so you shouldn't marry Miss Ingram. It's like, oh, yeah, well, she's great, isn't she?
Well, and she's kind of like, if he does marry her, like, she needs to leave.
Yes. And that is something that she says, is she's like, now, when this happens, you know, she'll want Adele to go to school.
Yeah.
And that would probably be the best situation because I probably shouldn't be here. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? And she's like, well, I'll advertise.
He's like, please don't advertise.
Yeah, don't do that.
Please don't leave. You missed all the cues here.
I know. I want you to
stay. I mean, so is he planning to marry Blanche or is she just inferring that?
I think she's just inferring that. Okay, I don't think he has any desire to marry Blanche.
Okay.
I think that's, it may be a ruse that he's kind of going with and allowing people to do, because it is very unusual for a man of his station to go for the governess. Yeah, that's very unusual.
Not nowadays.
That. Not nowadays. No. Thank heaven, good grief. But in those days, it was just not done. And so I think there's some hesitation on his part, but at the same time.
Oh, this is fascinating to me. It's so good. Okay, so chapter 21. This is the last chapter we're doing today. So have you ever heard that it's a bad omen to dream about children? Because
nope.
This is the only time I've ever seen that. But Jane has heard that it is a bad omen to dream about children. And now she has dreamed 7 nights in a row about babies. So she's worried that something is going to happen. And then that's when she learns that her cousin, John Reed, the guy that was abusive to her, he has committed suicide. And that her aunt, Mrs. Reed, had had a stroke and is dying. Which is funny because she probably, I don't know, he was causing her lots of trouble. And then he dies and she's like, I don't know, I probably threw her into something. So Mrs. Reed has requested that Jane come to Gateshead, which is crazy because she was like, before, she's like, I never want to see you again. Both of them were like, we're done. Like, we're parted ways. I don't ever want to come back. And it's interesting that Jane is like, okay, we'll go back. She kind of has this, she's like, it's been 8 years or whatever, 8 or 9 years. And I'm older and I can go back and be forgiving. She does go back. She gets to see Bessie again, which she loves. And she also gets to see her cousins, Eliza and Georgiana. Eliza is plain and she wants to enter a convent. And Georgiana is just absolutely beautiful, like she always has been. But ever since Eliza had basically ruined Georgiana's chances of eloping with this young man that she was in love with, they have not gotten along. And if you remember, Bessie had said that when she had come to see her before she left Lowood. She was like, they just don't get along. They're like, they hate each other. That's what's going on at the house. And they're fighting all the time. Jane goes to the house and she's going to try to patch things up with Mrs. Reed. And so she goes, it's funny because she goes there and they're like, well, she doesn't want to see anybody. And she's like, well, I came all this way. Do you think you could go ask her? And I guess at night, she's not as like with it or kind.
Yeah.
The first time she goes up there is in the evening, and Mrs. Reed is horrible to her. I can't remember what she says, but it's awful.
Well, she talks about Jane.
Like she's not there.
Like she's not there. And she just talks about what a burden she was and how horrible it was that she was stuck with her. And she kind of gives the background of how, I'm pretty sure it's in this moment that she talks about how she never liked Jane's mom. A lot of it was because her husband, Aunt Reed's husband, who was Jane's mom's brother, was very close to his sister and loved her, even though everybody else was trying to like sort of write her off because she had married a low born man, whatever. But he stayed close to her. And then when Jane's parents died, he definitely took Jane in and was more sweet to her than he had been to his own babies, which I mean, yeah, that's not okay. But like, it was this sweet little niece that he knew needed love.
Do you remember what she said too? She's like, they brought this infant home and it was ugly and it cried all the time. And like, she just had this disdain for her from the beginning. Yeah.
From the beginning. And she was like, I wanted him to just like hire a nurse for her and like send her away, maybe provide for her, but I didn't want her in my house. That's horrible. That's so sad.
Then she's like, and then on his deathbed, he makes me promise that I'm going to like keep her and raise her, which she doesn't fulfill. But
no.
Anyways, what an awful situation. The first time she goes up to her, that's how things go. It's just not well. She spends some time the next few, like 10 days, the next 10 days, she spends some time with her cousins, kind of gets to know them better. Then she gets to go back in and talk to the woman, I think they were like, finally, like, okay, she's well enough. Now you can come in here, because she'd been kind of in and out of it for the last 10 days. So she goes in and Mrs. Reed is with it and knows it's Jane and says, okay, so I have this thing that's been bothering me. 3 years ago, I got a letter from your Uncle John, who is, her father's? Yeah, her father's brother.
Her father's brother.
And he had said that he wanted to adopt Jane and give her everything. He never married, never had children. He wanted to give her everything that he had when he died.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Reed was like mad about it. And so she never told her. She didn't want her to get anything. And so it's been 3 years. What, I don't know. It's like at that point, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen after this, because I don't know what happens after this. But like, her probably trying to find him will be almost impossible. Maybe he's gone already.
Well, remember, this is the guy who stopped in
and went
to try to find her. And then he went someplace. They don't totally know, but he's like someplace off the continent. I mean, obviously, well, England is not considered part of the continent, but it was like an island somewhere, because they think that he's a wine merchant. So it'd be very hard to track him down.
Yes. Like, that's what I'm thinking. It's how impossible would that be? She finds this out. And then at the very end, Jane is still trying to like patch things up with her and be kind and forgiving. And she just is not going to take it. That night, she like puts her hand on her and like the lady like jerks her hand away from her and stuff. Like, she's dying and she's still mean.
Yeah.
Reed dies that night at midnight. And I loved what they said is like, we all left the room, even her daughters, and none of us shed a tear.
That was so sad.
None of us cared. And I think the girls, did it talk about how they're worried about what they're going to do after this?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because their brother had died and he had squandered a bunch of their money. They were going to be pretty much destitute. So they were very stressed.
Yeah, I just like, neither of us had dropped a tear. Like, we just walked out.
Yeah, that's very sad. Something that I thought was really interesting in that chapter two is that, not chapter two, but the chapter also, she's back with these people who had been so horrible to her. And they still are. They're just very aloof. They act like they're better than her. They kind of want nothing to do with her. But at the same time, you can tell that there's a bit of jealousy there, because they know, first of all, that she's very accomplished. I'm sure they've heard that from Bessie. More accomplished than they are. They may have beauty. They may have clothing. They may have all of that. But they are not. They don't really have anything else going for them. But also, she has potential to be taken care of for the rest of her life. You know, she inherits this stuff from her uncle and she's fine. She's totally fine. And they are not. And so that would place her above them. For her part, though, she's like, hey, these girls are so just silly and just dumb. And she doesn't care anymore. And one of the ways that she is able to cope with this is she draws a picture of Mr. Rochester.
This is full. And the girls are like, ugly man.
But she's like, but I love how she like, she finishes the picture and she gets it just right the way that she wants it. And she's like, I looked into the face of a friend. I was like, there he is. Now he's here with me. And now I'm fine because I know I have a friend. Even if he's not actually physically here, this is this reminder that, you know, I have this. And this is special and it's important and it helps me. So I love that.
I just think it's amazing when somebody can draw some picture of somebody from memory.
And it apparently actually looks like them.
Yeah.
That's
that was what I was going to say next. And it looks like them.
Yes. It's extremely impressive. For those of us who the extent of our drawing skills is literally like even ugly stick figures.
Yes.
Like there's people who are like, yeah, I just draw stick figures. I'm like, well, your stick figures are actually cute. There is a level zero because my stick figures aren't.
I have my ability to draw is zero.
Same.
Zero. We were painting, doing watercolors at the library the other day. I can't do anything artistic like that. Like my 7-year-old is much better at stuff like that than me. But
for myself, I blame it on a couple of things. Number one, the fact that art was just never really, that was just not an important thing in my home growing up. I was like, art, whatever.
Yeah.
But also the fact that I have hereditary tremors. And so my hands are shaky all the time. So I couldn't be a great sketch artist, even if I wanted to, because everything ends up just shaky.
Yeah. Does your handwriting look shaky?
It just depends. It's never perfect. I've been told I have decent handwriting, but it's hard for it to be consistent.
Yeah,
I because have of the shakes. So
I don't shake, but my handwriting is not consistent. It's like basically it must be what mood I'm in or something.
I think some of it is like what you've eaten that day. You know, how you're feeling physically and mentally, and that, which sounds weird, but I think it all like comes through in our writing. So yeah.
Well, they say like, you know, kids will be, they develop their art until like at one point somebody tells you that it's bad and then that's it. Then they will stop.
Which isn't that crazy? Yeah.
I must have been like 4. I don't know. Because I don't remember ever being able to draw. Katie can draw pretty well and Presley draws pretty good. Audrey does.
All my kids, they do pretty well. Matt has never had the patience for it. It's never been a matter of like, oh, that doesn't look good. It's like, he's just never had the patience.
Like not interested?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like even with his handwriting curriculum that we use, his handwriting has gotten quite a bit better. But in the handwriting curriculum, they include drawing as part of it because to help develop all those little muscles. He will not do it. I mean, he will do the bare minimum. And you're like, what is that even? But he doesn't like it. Doesn't have the patience for it.
That's me.
Wild.
That's probably me. So next week we are going to do chapter 22 through 27. So that's
awesome.
6 chapters instead of 5. So maybe they're a little shorter.
So here's what's wild though, is so much has happened and we're only halfway through the book. A lot more to come. It's pretty fun.
I know. It's just going to get better, right?
Yeah, as classics usually do, they just snowball and just keep
getting
bigger and better. And
this is a book. This is a long book.
Sure is.
Have you had any time to read?
No. I know my personal training manual really well because I took a test on Friday.
Did you pass?
I did pass.
Yay!
I have my personal training certification.
So now you can move on, right?
Yes. Well, now I'm doing group fitness, and then I'm doing cycling, and then I'm doing running.
So, like a test?
Yeah. So I'm doing certifications for all those
as well.
But the personal training is definitely the most difficult. So I'm not. And yeah, there's reading for all. So yeah, currently I'm reading a group fitness manual. All about the manuals these
Who
days.
Who would have known there was a group fitness manual?
Right. There's a lot. There's a lot of group fitness manuals. It just depends on who you go through. Oh. So tell me about your book.
Okay, so I read The Women by Kristen Hannah today.
Ew, okay.
I have a love-hate relationship with it.
Okay.
Ugh, I don't even know what to tell you.
Now I really want.
You should read it.
I'm just going to make time for it.
Now,
Let's see.
Carlina.
Let me see if it's on Hoopla.
It's not.
Oh, no.
I had to wait forever for it.
Oh, shoot. On
but,
the beat.
Harlena, she told me a few weeks ago that she was reading it and she stopped because she was annoyed. And I was reading it, I was listening to it today, and I was like, this is really good. This is really good. This is really good. And then I got to this point and I was like, okay, I'm annoyed. I hate cheating men. I don't
Is that what it's about?
No, but okay. But there is, yes, there's some of that in there. Basically, it's about a young girl who is, I listened to it today. Can't remember her name.
20-year-old nursing student, Frances McGrath.
Frankie. Her name's Frankie. Yeah. Her parents have this like wall of heroes on their wall. And it's all like her grandpa and great grandpa, whatever, that had served in the like army or navy or whatever. Her brother enlists. And so she decides that she gets a nursing degree and she decides that she wants to go help Vietnam. And so she enlists. And her parents are ticked at her.
Okay.
And then her brother dies before she even gets to go. So she joins the army. And they were kind of mad at her because she didn't join the Navy. But like to join the Navy, she had to do more training. But like to join the army and be a nurse in the army, she could just go to basic training and then get shipped over to Vietnam.
Okay.
So she does that. The first half of the book is her in Vietnam as a combat nurse. And it's crazy. So if you can't handle like blood and gore and stuff, like reading about that, then this is not the book for you. And I kind of thought it was gross, but like I can handle it. It's fine. So that's the first half of the book. The second half of the book, she comes home and she's struggling because she was in Vietnam. But the bad thing is they're like, women didn't serve in Vietnam. Like, so she would go to the VA to get help. And they would be like, no, we just help men here. Like, and they would even, when she was like, I'm a vet. And they would say, yeah, but you didn't see combat. So you're not, like, you don't.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Her parents are mad at her. Like, everybody, she comes back and everybody is like protesting the war. And they're all mad that she went. Which made me like, I got to ask my parents some questions because now I have questions. I have an uncle that came home from Vietnam that was like seriously messed up for the rest of his life, like a recluse.
In studying about it, that's the conclusion that I drew, is that a lot of the reason that so many have had so many issues, first of all, it was horrific. But then to come home and be like, I went through that and nobody here supports me. Everybody thinks it was a waste of time and that I shouldn't have even done that.
Nobody wanted to talk to her. Like, yeah. She wasn't allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, that and messes with you.
Her parents wouldn't put her up on the, like, heroes wall at their house.
Yeah.
Her dad had made up a lie and told everybody that she was in Florence studying abroad. So she came home and she's like, I was in Vietnam. And everybody's like, what?
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't let her talk about it. It was very good. But, like, 75% of the way through, I was like, you didn't just do that.
Oh.
The author.
The author. Oh, interesting. Okay. And yet that's part of her brilliance, I think. I think she's
well, and you're listening, like reading or whatever, and you're like, how can all this happen to one person? Nobody could possibly go through all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very sad. It's very sad. She will kill you. She'll wreck you. I want you to read it because I'm dying to know what you think. But
I want to read it too. I just put it on hold. It does say several months wait.
It went faster for me than I thought. Like it sat out for a long time and then all of a sudden I got it. But
okay,
it was very interesting. And Carlina and I've been texting about it all day. And she said, thanks for not liking it. I didn't want to be the only one. And I said, well, my feelings about this book are complicated.
Yeah. But I'm sorry. That's how you know it's a great book. If you're thinking about it and not totally sure how you feel about it, that's probably, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably a good sign.
Something happens and you're like, oh my gosh. And then not even a few minutes later, something else happens and you're like, that's, I don't know if that undoes what just happened or if it made it worse.
Oh, interesting.
Kristen Hannah is an excellent author, though.
Oh, she's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, if you want a book that you will want to listen to, like a page turner, this is it.
That is what I need. I would probably listen to it. Maybe I'll have to read it to my kids. That's the only way I'm going to actually be able
you can't,
to.
I wouldn't read it to them. We'd have to skip some stuff.
I know. Fair enough. But can you guys just go to sleep and get the sophisticated language through osmosis and forget the rest?
I know. And I'm like working in a dental office today and I'm listening to like vaccine, you know? And I'm like, nobody here knows that this is what's coming into my earbuds. I mean, it's not like that, you know what I mean?
That's not like not smutty super, or something.
Yeah, and not super graphic. It's just funny. Like,
oh man.
Filling my machines and nobody knows what I'm listening to.
Yeah.
It was great. I like I said, complicated feelings about it. So
yeah, interesting. We are so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, chapters 22 through 27. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share a podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.